Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And today we have a very special guest. I've been trying to get him on the show forever. It is the legendary Robbie Robinson. And Robbie is joined by his friend Rick Valente, who helped us set up the interview. We did the interview at Gold's Gym over Skype. And unfortunately, they had trouble hearing me. So during the interview, you're going to hear Rick kind of repeating my questions to Robbie. But it was just an honor to finally get to interview Robbie after all these years. I've been trying to interview him for literally years because he is such a big legend in the sport of bodybuilding. And we've had so many guests on the Bodybuilding Legends show and the Bodybuilding Legends podcast that have told me that Robbie was such a big influence in their careers, including 8-time Mr. Olympia Lee Haney, Chris Cormier, Phil Williams, on and on and on. All those guys that grew up during that era, all of them were inspired by Robbie Robinson. He had an incredible career, really made his breakthrough in 1975 when he went over to the IFBB and won the IFBB Mr. America. And then, of course, he was featured quite prominently in the movie Pumping Iron, and then went on to have one of the best careers in the history of bodybuilding. He competed, he won the 1976 Mr. Universe in Montreal over Mike Mentzer. He won the 1976 Mr. International, which was held with the Mr. Olympia that year, the Franco one. And then in 1977, he started competing as a pro, and he was in the Mr. Olympia and took a close second place to Frank Zane in his very first Mr. Olympia. And then Robbie was second again the next year in 1978. Robbie also won the very first Night of the Champions in 1978, which was one of the very first pro shows besides Mr. Olympia. And just an unbelievable career. And he kept competing. And then he went over to WABA, which was Serge and Bray's organization. He went over to NABA in the early 1980s, came back to the IFBB, competed successfully in all throughout the 1980s, really hit his peak in 1988, where he won, I think it was the Niagara Falls Pro Show over Phil Hill, and then started competing in the Masters Mr. Olympia when they had that in the 1990s. And now we are in 2019. Robbie is, I think, going to be 72 years old this year, or 73, and he is still in amazing shape. He's still at Gold's Gym. He's still training heavy. And, of course, we know, as I mentioned last week on the show, he's in the hospital currently going through sickle cell anemia, which he's had his whole life. And I guess he's going through some hard times right now. So there's a GoFundMe page for Robbie Robinson's hospital bills. And they are able to raise some money, thankfully. So I hope Robbie's doing well. I was grateful that we were able to get this interview in when he was still healthy. And so I hope he gets out of the hospital soon. All right, and also later in the show, we're going to have another article reading. This will be from the November 1976 issue of Muscle Builder magazine, and it's by Arnold himself. And Arnold talks about how he used to prepare for contests and what he did to get ready to compete. So it's really, really interesting, especially the mental perspective he takes. So you guys are going to love that. This issue, by the way, is filled with great articles, so I'm going to go back to this issue for sure over the next couple of weeks and read some more. And I want to mention that we are brought to you by Old School Labs, our sponsor. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. I'm talking no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors or sweeteners. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is the world's first two-stage pre-workout. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe contest in 2012. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the 2017 and 2018 Classic Physique Olympia champion. They also sponsor 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute, bodybuilding legend Tom Platz, and bodybuilding legend Chris Cormier. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get a 12% discount off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, and I also want to right off the bat thank our Patreon contributors, Scott Barron, and then James Kerr came on the Patreon account this week. So Patreon is a service that lets you, the fans, contribute money, if you so choose, to help the Bodybuilding Legends podcast continue going, because we do have costs here. So if you go to bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, which is the website, and you look in the upper right-hand corner, there is a Patreon link, and Scott and now James are both contributors every month, so I really appreciate you guys contributing to the website. If you guys appreciate the podcast or appreciate the website, if you want to contribute, I would really, really love it, and I will mention your names on the air for your contribution. Also this week, I was finally able to put the Ed Corney video up. This was from the tribute show we did about Ed a couple weeks ago. I talked to Mike Katz, and I also talked to IFBB judge Roger Schwab, and we talked about the life and the career of Ed Corney. And then I concluded that podcast by reading an article that Ed wrote for Muscle Builder magazine in 1976, which was really gave us a sense of what Ed was thinking and how his mental attitude was towards bodybuilding. I thought it was really, really great. Well, I was finally able to add some video footage of Ed's performances along with some great pictures, and I put it into video form, so it is on YouTube. So check out my YouTube page, John Hansen, and click like on that video if you like it. So I've got the full video of the whole podcast that we did, and I've also got Mike's interview separately. I've got reading the article separately, and I've got the part where I talked to Roger Schwab is all separate videos. So check that out when you get a chance. You guys are really going to love that video footage. I got a lot of it from Wayne Galash and GMV Productions. So if you ever want to see some really great old contest, you got to check out Wayne Galash's website, which is gmvproductions.com. And just Google it and you'll find it. And Wayne has been shooting videos for the longest time, but he's got some really classic old 60s and 70s videos. So go check that out. And I also want to mention my sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, has a new supplement out called the Magic Pill. Everyone is looking for that magic pill, right? Well, here it is. It's developed and backed by science. This formula was made by chemists and expert formulators working with Florida Alternative Medicine. This revolutionary fat-burning product is getting rave reviews from athletes all over the country. So if you want to order a month's supply of this amazing fat loss pill and thermogenic, it is now $39.99, and you can call Florida Alternative Medicine today at 813-922-8939 and order yours. And we did get a couple good emails last week, so I want to read those. I appreciate you guys sending in your emails about your thoughts on the show and any suggestions you have. This one is from Tim Christ, and Tim is a longtime listener of the podcast and also watches a lot of the videos, which is on bodybuildinglegendshow.com. And Tim says, again, I want to tell you what a great show. I can't wait every week to listen. I would like to share a funny story. My twin brother and I wanted to start competing in bodybuilding shows. At 17 years old, the year was 1972, I asked a powerlifter about a show that was going to be held in Cincinnati, the Mr. Midwest. He said that would be a good one to enter. Well, when we get to the show, all I can tell you, there was Doug Beaver, Don Ross, Sammy Willis, and those guys didn't win, but as most know, they were all Mr. America contenders a few years later. And I think Sammy won a pro Mr. America in the WBBG. It was a learning experience, but I'm still at it. And I won the Masters Mr. Cincinnati last year. Bodybuilding forever. Tim Christ. All right, Tim, that was great. I remember all those names. Doug Beaver, Don Ross, of course. He used to write for the magazines as well. Sammy Willis, I actually saw him compete in Chicago because I think he was from Indiana. Short black guy filled with muscle, super thick. So that was a great email. Thank you for that. This one is from Bill Longadice. He says, "Hi, John. Thanks for the excellent podcast. I've been listening to podcasts for many years, and yours has become one of only a handful of must-listens. I thought the two-part Boyer Co. interview was great, although I did wish you had asked him a bit more about his unusual abs. Outside of his extraordinary bicep peak, I always thought it was his abs that were the most distinctive body part. He's the only upper-tier competitive bodybuilder I can think of who had a genetic disadvantage where even in top shape, he really couldn't consistently display visible ab muscles, save for certain poses, and then usually only the few upper rows. I would have liked to have known more what he tried to do to correct that unusual genetic limitation and how he thought it may or may not have affected his placings. Perhaps in a future interview, because that would certainly be interesting to also hear more about his time on the Flex TV show and more on his two Masters Olympia appearances, especially the 10th place appearance in 1995 and why he called it quits after that. All right, Bill, thank you for that email. Those are some good questions. So if I do have Boyer on the podcast again, which I hope I do, I will definitely answer, or I will definitely ask him those questions. And on the Ed Corney video that I put on YouTube, I did also get some comments on that. Chris Widener says, it's always a joy to see your work. All the best. Indeed, Ed was a champion. Pooh Bear Jenkins said, a great interview and tribute. Easy E said, lean and thick was that era. Today's bodybuilding is heavy and deformed. And he also said, Frank Zane, I think, is one of the greatest, too. NJN said, thank you for this video. Rest in peace, Ed, one of the all-time greats. Great job getting the perspective of Mike Katz. Mike seems like one of the most genuine guys to ever pump the iron. I was fortunate to meet Mike once. He's as down-to-earth as it gets and obviously a wealth of golden-era knowledge. Mike said that was he was one of the best posers, if not the best of all time, and an incredible physique. Samuel Clemens said, the greatest poser. I saw Ed in the first night of the champions in 1978. His posing routine sent chills down your spine. He received the only standing ovation of the show. And then JC Studios 100 says, hi, John. Was there TV coverage of the 73 and 74 Olympia? Thanks. No, there was not. They did not cover that. The 74 Olympia, I told JC, was covered in Sports Illustrated magazine. So that was one of the few Mr. Olympias that got mainstream magazine, and especially back in 1974, Sports Illustrated was a huge magazine because the magazines back then were really important in covering events. And JC asked me if I had that magazine, and I actually do. I still do have it. So maybe one day I'll read that article on the podcast as well. That would be a great one to read. A couple other comments. Iron Man said, I love the old school athletes, full of character and words of wisdom and knowledge in abundance. And Guy Graham said, hi, John, I just watched the full episode earlier, and you ended it with this article. It's fantastic. The article was amazing, and your words at the end for Ed were very dignified. With much respect, John, a great interview and tribute to the best poser of all time. Rest in peace, Ed Corney. All right, thank you guys for those comments. I always appreciate getting your emails. If you want to send any emails to me at all, just use my email address, which is naturalolympia@gmail.com. And also, I am doing more online programs, so if you need any help with your training or nutrition, you can also email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. Or if you just want to go right to my website and fill out the form to get started on a new program for your training or nutrition, just go to dadbod2ripbod.com. Use the number 2, dadbod2ripbod.com. I did sign up a few more people this week, so I guess you guys are starting to get in shape for the upcoming spring because we are ready in the third week in February, so it is going by fast. All right, before we get to our interview with Robbie Robinson, I also want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. Our certified and knowledgeable staff will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. Our wide range of services ensure that you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, which is 813-922-8939, or you can check out their brand new website at flalternativemeds.com. FL for Florida, alternativemeds.com. And they will give you a free consultation if you mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. They'll also give you 20% off your order. All right, so that is it for our opening. I hope you guys enjoy this interview with the legend Robbie Robinson and his friend Rick Valente, which we did a couple weeks ago at Gold Gym. Here we go.
A lot of history here, baby.
A lot of junk.
You got it. A lot of history. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legend Show, and I'm very proud this week to have two guests, the legendary Robbie Robinson. We've been trying to get him on forever, the Black Prince, one of the legends in the sport, And Rick Valente, his good friend Rick Valente, is sitting next to him. How you doing, guys?
We're doing great, man. We're blessed.
Great, great. I'm glad to have you guys here. All right. Well, Robbie, let's start with you. I've been dying to get you on the show because I've had so many people on the show, like Roy Callender and Lee Haney and so many other guys who have said they looked up to you when they were starting bodybuilding. So it's great to finally get a chance to talk to you in person. Robbie, tell me a little bit about how you started bodybuilding. I remember reading an article once, and you said that you started working out of the gym where they only had a 90-pound dumbbell, and you had to use that 90-pound dumbbell for everything. So how did you get started in bodybuilding? I know about your bodybuilding career, but how did you get started?
How did you get started in bodybuilding? He wants to know. He said he heard that you only had a 90-pound dumbbell, and you had to do everything with that 90-pound dumbbell. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, I just... I'm a big Jack LaLanne fan. I started off with Jack LaLanne, and that was really my mentor. He got me really started into wanting to be physically fit and healthy. And, you know, throughout my, I probably started 7 or 8 years old, I started being healthy.
Jack LaLanne, he really was the godfather.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't talk about Jack LaLanne, but
yeah,
he really did help a lot of people out. And what I loved about Jack LaLanne is he educated the public.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a lot of these gurus today where they just show you videos where they think they look good, but they're not educating the public on how many reps, how many sets, what this certain movement, what body part it works.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it seemed to have gotten lost from what I'm seeing on the internet and social media. I'll be honest with you, I don't see how you can build muscle that way. Real seriously.
Yeah.
I've seen the guy just pumping the weight, moving weight. To me, that's just not bodybuilding. I just, I can respect what they're trying to do to get to that level where they are.
And so what was your
come
first
to the gym and train with me, Rick.
Yeah.
What was
your first show that you've done?
The first competition I entered was just, I think, Mr. Florida.
Okay.
I mean, Stan Maury. Stan Maury brought me into the whole mix of coming out to Florida and Tampa and St. Petersburg and entering all these competitions, all AAU at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was basically just going through all the whole AAU circuit. John, I was winning all the body parts to place me fifth or fourth or third because it was just, I guess, unusual for them to see somebody that looked like the way I look. And I know it came from definitely a lot of hard work and that 10 plus 10 for each body part. And I was totally what you call it, obsessed.
But you were an athlete before
that.
Did you
football
play football
player? Yeah.
And track athlete too, right, Robin?
I was a fullback, all this, all American, all state, all everything.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
And I love sport. I thought it was like the foundation of everything. Really.
Where did you grow up, Robin?
Football.
Where did you grow up?
Tallahassee, Florida.
Tallahassee, okay.
Tallahassee is the capital of Florida. I live basically inland. It's probably about 500, maybe 600 miles from Miami. And I basically grew up in Tallahassee.
Okay.
Richard Baldwin was one of my mentors.
Yeah.
He was one of the guys that I looked up to. Big George was another person that was trained in Florida State at the time. So
yeah,
I had people that kind of, you know, empowered me to come out there and do it a little bit better.
So what
Richard
got
Baldwin,
you
Big George.
What got you into bodybuilding? Was there a magazine you saw, or was there a certain bodybuilder you saw?
Certain magazine you saw that got you into bodybuilding, and what
or,
year
a bodybuilder?
I came to California in 75, but there really wasn't that many magazines. I think it was Strength and Health, maybe Muscle Development, but I was a little bit, I didn't have the cash in the bowel when I was at that point. But whenever I got with Richard Baldwin would always educate me, bring me and my friends to his home and let us read all these magazines to get inspired and motivated.
Yeah. So when you were in all those sports, Robbie, did your physique just develop naturally because you had such great genetics? I mean, did you playing football and running track, did you just start to develop a muscular physique from that?
Did you start developing a muscular physique from your sports when you were younger? It was all natural, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just always had a physique, John. I didn't really do too much to get it. I was just naturally muscular.
Yeah.
My mom and my pop were both had good figures and good shapes.
Yeah.
So I think it evolved from that. And I just kind of started lifting. And then all of a sudden, that 90-pound dumbbell started losing. Wow. I started to put on some size.
Yeah, yeah.
I was all thrilled about the whole thing.
Right.
And then I started going out to the train tracks and getting these old train wheels to lift.
Really?
Got me a bar.
Really?
Got
so
me
you
a
made
bar.
Your own weight?
I made my own weight pretty much. They got me a bar and put all this weight.
And from watching Jack LaLanne,
exactly.
You learned
movement. Exactly.
Right.
I mean, he always would do his movements real crisp and smooth, and I started doing the same thing. I mean, you need people that are out there to motivate you and inspire you and get you into that right set. So I had a nice clique of people.
Robbie's one of the only guys I know, God bless him, who, you know, he's always in shape.
Yeah.
He always eats clean. And like a lot of these other guys we've watched over the years, they have all these injuries and surgeries and their bodies are breaking down.
Yeah.
He's still lifting heavy.
Still lifting heavy.
I mean, he's amazing. I got to tell you. Robbie was on my wall in my basement when I was a kid.
Right.
I would work out and look at him. I want to look like that. And then when I came out to California, we met. We just clicked. We started training together.
Yeah.
I worked on his posing routines for his shows. We mixed some James Brown music.
See you do it.
Woo, that was off the charts.
I'm telling you, I loved it.
Yeah, Lee.
So
Hank,
when you first came to California, where did you train?
I came to the training
Gold.
You know, first, when I first came here, I walked down and sit in the doorway and see, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Franco Colombo. They look like this little kid, you know, like,
right.
Wow, you can't be wild about Barrison. And I'm like in a maze. So I'm standing by the door one day for a couple of weeks there. Then he noticed me. And then he gave and said, you know, because he lived in the same complex, he said, hey, you know, come train with us. And that's how I got involved in the whole Puffin Iron. Trained with Arnold and all the guys.
Yeah.
That was the whole initiation into it.
Right. What did those guys think of your physique,
great time.
Robbie?
I loved it. Great time.
What did those guys, Robbie, Arnold and Franco and all those guys, what did they think of your physique when they saw you? Because you were an awesome physique back in 75.
Arnold and Franco, what did they think of your physique when they first saw you?
Amazing. Yeah, because it brought attention to someone else and they recognized it right away. I think that's why they let me get inside of that clique and become trained and train with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest with you, my body exploded.
Yeah.
I was amazed how you train with someone like that. And you've already read them, seen pictures of them in the magazine. You're actually training with them. You want to do the exercises perfect. You want to do everything in the right order. You want to listen to what they got to say. And
right.
I was totally ears.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt I was training with you.
Yeah, I was all ears. I wanted to hear everything they would have to say. Yeah. Being nosy, I was nosy.
See, and back then, John, we would train together. We would lay out in the sun together. We would eat together.
Yeah.
We would help each other out for shows.
Yeah.
It was a whole different generation of bodybuilder competitors.
Sure.
Today, the guys have headsets on. They don't talk to anybody.
Right.
Nobody hangs out together. It's just a whole different generation of bodybuilders.
Yeah. That time period, I loved it because we would lay out in the sun together. I mean, after you get through point, there was no going to eat until you get through posing. You have to pose. Everybody had to go.
Oh, really?
Do
wow.
Some mandatory poses.
Cool.
And they drill you.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be sitting out there, but if you're in your cage, excuse my language, telling you point blank, that's not good enough. Turn your wrist back, do this, do that. And you're doing all these things. You're sweating, John, like a pig. But that whole thing, when it came showtime, you look like a piece of iron on stage. I still think posing, Rick has drilled me, dogged me in the posing room. The more you drill that body from all that heavy weight, the more shape, the more beautiful it becomes.
You know what's crazy, John? When you look at the older generation of bodybuilders, when they were on stage and they hit a pose, there was no shaking.
No.
I mean,
it comes from the posing.
They practiced posing so much, they knew exactly when to get in and to get out.
And to come out of it.
And they would breathe and hold the pose.
Yep.
Guys, today, I watched the Olympia about 2 years ago in Vegas, and guys were up there holding the pose,
and
shaking.
And they're shaking like old men.
At the Olympia,
Those don't make sense to me. No disrespect to them, John, the guys out there.
Yeah.
Like, hey, the more you work on the poses, the more you become a piece of art, the less you want to shake up that more deeper separation between the muscle groups.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to be confident, give you more confidence, because that pose, you know what to do.
You
know what to train your wrist, train your place, your feet.
Right.
It's just, you become emotionally compassionate and tied to it.
Yeah.
And you put on a show that even if the audience wasn't into bodybuilding, they still loved the performance.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was like ballet. I mean,
look
at Ed Korn.
It was art.
Still to this day, People talk about how amazing Ed Corney is.
Right.
So I want to tell these young bodybuilders, watch film of Ed Corney.
Yeah.
You know, and study his posing routines and put on a show.
With that thing. I think one of the people that they are trying to do it was, Melvin Anthony was trying to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, her name. Kai Green does a great job, awesome job.
Yeah,
and I think that's what the sport really needs to recapture.
Put on a performance.
Yeah, performance. I mean, be alive out there. You bring the artists to their feet.
Yeah, and please don't come out and go like this with your
hair. You haven't done anything.
We're not wrestlers.
Right.
You're bodybuilding.
Thank you.
Right.
You're a piece of art.
Hey, Robbie, when you were going in all those AAU shows and you were doing good in Florida and then you went to the national level, I remember the 1975 AAU Mr. America, you went in and you were a real big sensation. Because I just talked to Pat Neavy. Remember Pat Neavy?
Pat Neavy, do you remember him?
Oh, yeah. Pat was a huge inspiration for me when I came through the ranks because I wanted to be all muscular, ripped up just like Pat.
Yeah.
When I saw his physique, I just marveled. It looked like marble.
Right, right.
I mean, the separation, I'm thinking like, wow, that's how I want to look. I thought it was amazing. I still, when I see pictures of even today, I still find it amazing how the deep grooves.
Yeah,
I know
yeah.
how hard he worked to get there.
Right, right.
You don't have to say a word. I mean, it's incredible. He made me a great compliment. I think about a couple of weeks ago, he said, "Robbie, I wish I'd had Robbie Robinson to work with me." To me, that really, I mean, it brought my eyes, got a little teary because he doesn't have a clue how much I admired and respected him at the same time.
Oh, wow, that's cool. Yeah, so Pat beat you at the 74 Mr. USA, but then at the 75 America, he said that everybody was saying, "Have you seen Robbie? Have you seen Robbie?" And you really made a lot of improvement. You really put on a lot of size at that show.
At the 75 Mr. America, they were all saying how amazing you look in the 75 Mr. America. So
I think my whole concept of it just this mind thing. I really get into that. Imaginative thing of how I want my physique to look. I've always done that. Rick and I really drove each other back in the old days on that thing. The more you have that imagination thing of how you want your physique to look, it's the same as you're doing a curl or a barbell roll. I mean, you want to imagine how you want your physique to look.
Yeah.
So each time I go out and I hit a pole, I want to look awesome. I want to blow their minds. I want to stun
them. You did. You're front
double. That's the whole thing. That's how I saw it.
You know, you and, for me, you and Arnold have the best front double biceps in bodybuilding history. For
I agree.
When you look at those things, you're like, wow.
I mean,
it just looks like that's how it should look.
That's the way it should look.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Right.
And, you know, I was thinking this the other day. I watch people train today. A lot of professional bodybuilders in golds now. Nobody stretches in between sets anymore.
No.
And we all stretched in between sets.
In between the sets.
Arnold did that.
Yeah.
Robbie did that. And you look at their physiques, the muscle was just longer and fuller.
Yeah.
And I try to ask trainers today, why doesn't anybody stretch in between sets? And one of the trainers were telling me, well, you can't stretch in between sets because it creates lactic acid.
And it removes lactic acid.
That if you stretch the muscle you're training in between sets, you'll actually get a better pump, too.
The next set. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I believe. I've been practicing it for years. I always stretch it.
Yeah.
Back, bicep, tricep. I'm always doing posing in between the sets. John, I still do that to this day. I think that's one of the reasons I kind of still look the way I look in the picture. Facebook and Instagram. That's what it is. I work a lot of skill on my posing.
Yeah. Yeah, Pat told me a story. He said at the
I'm passionate about it, John.
Yeah, I could tell. Pat told me a story. He said at the 74 USA, he went up to Robbie and he said, "Do you know who I am?" And Robbie said, "Yeah, you're Pat Neavy." And he goes, "You're not going to beat me tonight." And he said, Robbie told him, "Yeah," he goes, you might win tonight, but he goes, "One day," he goes, "no one's going to beat me."
So Pat said he saw you at the 74 USA?
74 USA. The Pat won.
74 USA. And he came up to you and said, "You're not going to beat me today."
Yeah.
And you said, "Oh, yes, I will." So who won that show?
I think Pat probably won.
Pat won that show?
Yeah, Pat won. It was great. I loved it. You need to be inspired by other people and motivated to be better. I mean, he had a name. He was very established in the AAU. He had a great physique.
He's
he has a physique that looked like rivers.
Yes.
I mean, grooves in between the muscles.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's awesome.
You know, it's fun and it motivates you to have friendly competition.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, yeah. and that's what we had back in the 80s and 90s
yeah.
here. Because we would compete against how much weight,
yeah.
how many reps.
Yeah.
I found a letter. This girl I dated named Hanali from...
I remember.
Remember Hanali?
Yeah.
From Sweden?
Yeah.
She just sent me a box of stuff she found, and she found a letter that I wrote her. I think it was 1983.
Yeah, yeah.
That I was so excited that I was training around Lyle Alzado, Robbie,
yeah.
Tom Platz,
mm.
and I did 18 reps with 315. I was so excited.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, I know a lot of people could do that and do more, but back then, we really pushed ourselves as far as you could go, and then further.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you're always going to do more, get better. I mean, you can always reinvent yourself. You can always get better. One of the things I was thinking about the most when I retired, I wanted to see if I could regain some of my old physique. I was still at a wall with a challenge in myself to get back, to
yeah.
see if I could reduce and get back to something that resembled my old physique. I've accomplished my goal.
Oh, yeah.
You can do it. You
yeah.
know, I just keep working on it and working on it.
See, back then, John, we were so competitive.
Oh, yeah.
If I couldn't lift more weight than you,
yeah.
I would do more reps.
Do something.
Yeah.
You have to do something.
Right, right. So, Rick, after Robbie got fifth in the 75 AAU America, and a lot of people thought he should have won,
right.
is that what made him decide to go over to the IFBB and go into Mr. America that year?
After the 75 America mm-hmm. that everybody thought you should have won,
mm-hmm.
then you went into the IFBB?
They won the ABBA America IFBB.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was pretty much, they had already kind of set that in a sense that this is going to be the next stop. That's
yeah.
how I saw it.
Yeah, yeah.
Going in and winning ABB America, then after that, Mr. World, Mr. Universe.
Yeah.
I felt I accomplished pretty much everything that I wanted to accomplish in my career.
And that's when you moved to
and
California,
then
right?
Mr. Olympias and stuff with Frank Zane. And,
that was when he moved to California.
Winning the Masters Mr. Olympia. To me, that's everything.
Yeah.
Not saying beating anyone, but just actually accomplishing the goal of winning the Sandow and being Mr. Olympia at some level. Winning the first Masters, that's
yeah.
the end of my career right there. I loved it. I look at that trophy every day, John.
So 75, that was when you went to California then, when you moved to California.
75, he came to California, yep.
Yeah.
And then coincidentally, that was the summer they were filming Pumping Iron at Gold's Gym, right? And so you were a big part of that movie.
That's when they were filming Pumping Iron at
yeah.
Gold's Gym?
No, Pumping Iron yeah, came around about that time. Yeah, exactly. Arn was getting ready for his last Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
I was getting ready for Mr. World. I think Mr. World and Mr. Universe.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was a battle. I mean, I loved the joint. It was so competitive.
Yeah.
Reps, I mean, sets. I mean, I loved it. It was like actually getting on stage and being on a competition.
Yeah.
I mean, all of his set, I do my set. Danny do his set. Hey, Corey do his set. After that, we go and do it. Go and get our food, lay on the beach, come back. I do my set.
They're filming everything.
Yeah.
And the real, I'm honest with you, just between us, the real Pumping Iron is in Arnold's vault.
Yeah, yeah. He's got 100 hours, right?
Nobody's seen it.
You know, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
What we were doing in that gym was not in Pumping Iron.
Really?
Sorry. But I love the gym because it was powerful. It was so,
yeah.
I'm getting a little chills talking about it.
Right.
Because it was just so powerful time period, especially for myself, young, coming from Florida, being able to train with Arnold and Columbo and watch what they do and see guys challenge. I was challenged every day I came to the gym.
Yeah.
Today, nobody challenges. Everybody's walking around with their headphones on.
Right, right.
Sometimes I get into it with, I got into it in the gym with Sean, Miss Olympia.
Yeah.
And they were all pressing all this weight and everything, and I was standing there watching them, and they got through. I said, just leave it on.
warm up.
They got all upset, y'all. But I loved it, because
right.
and they Sean would have said, you're talking about no more sets.
Yeah.
But I loved it, because
right.
it created a connection with the old school and the new school.
Hey, tell me about the trip to Pretoria, South Africa for that Mr. Universe, Mr. Olympia. Tell me all about that.
What about the trip to South Africa for the Universe show you did?
In Pretoria.
I thought it was a great experience. going to South Africa at that time period because of the apartheid. And to be honest with you, John, I hadn't even heard the word.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about that racial differences in that culture. I think a lot of us were shocked. But we went there, I think, in honor of Greg Parks, mm-hmm. Schwarzenegger, and the people that actually ran the business. They held it in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny Walden won the overall title, plus his head, I won the middleweight beating Abba Beckles.
Yeah.
But it was an incredible time period for myself and a great experience at the same time to be a part of such an event.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about Kenny Waller. How'd you like him? I know you had a good friendship with him, right?
Tell him a little bit about Kenny Waller.
Oh, nobody liked Big Red. No, Big Red was like the man. He come in the gym. He said, "Where's that black boy? Where's that black boy at?" And I said, "I'm over here." He said, "Come do dumbbell presses with me." He started with the 150.
He was small.
Off the clock.
Yeah.
He too was a former football player.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was Roger
Calvert. I mean, a lot of us came back from that old school, that football athlete, whatever, it is athlete mentality.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Arnold was the same way. A lot of the guys, Franco was the same way. They basically all come from that sports mentality. So it makes you a completely difficult athlete bodybuilder. That's my take.
You think
he's Big Red? I still think about him sometimes.
Yeah.
The men coming in the gym. So where's that black guy at? Called me the other day. My name is Kenny Wallace. He shook my hand. Well, I'm doing dumbbell presses today. I said, cool. He gonna go and get the 150s. I think he's gonna warm up. He grabbed the 150s, 10 reps like it was nothing. Mm-hmm. Put him down. You're set. I grabbed him. Of course, I got.
Yeah.
Know what I mean? Yeah. Shaking all the things. But then he said, you gotta hold it steady.
Yeah.
But just the experience of that. Experiencing with Ed Cornyn, working on the posing every day.
Yeah.
Going through all that stuff, feeling what you're doing, breathing, acclimating, or seeing Arnold sit on your back and you do five sets of 30s for donkeys, and then you got Arnold on your back plus Ed Cornyn on your back for five sets of 30s. You know, you're doing this stuff and you're going through all the competition. So I really think it had a huge effect on my mentality to be better than I was.
Yeah, yeah.
Motivation. You need motivation and inspiration.
Did you guys ever hang out, Robbie? Did you ever go out, like, to clubs and stuff, you know, with Waller and all those guys?
Did you ever go out to clubs with these guys?
Yeah, of course. We went out. You know, that was a normal thing on the weekend.
The 70s,
We can't talk too much about that. Because the weed movement is out there.
Yeah.
We used to go to clubs.
But that was the disco era, right? The 70s was the disco era.
It was a great time period to be among guys that enjoyed, you know, training and being in great shape and building a name that helped really transcend and build a sport. And it was an honor to work with Arnold and Franco and Zane and all the guys with preparation, Ken Waller,
Sergio
Olivia. I mean, Denny Gable. I mean,
Serge Dubray.
Oh. I mean, it was just like you were on the planet of nothing but incredible bodies.
Yeah. I did an interview with Manny Perry, and he was talking about training with Robbie.
He did an interview with Manny Perry.
Manny Perry was like, I thought would have been the next great.
Really. Yeah.
He had incredible physique. Yeah. He's tall, thick, natural physique.
Yeah.
Great calves. He had a great physique.
Yeah.
And I think he came in one of Miss America, placed something in the Miss America.
Won his class, yeah.
I mean, I thought he would have been the next great bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Seriously. But Manny was a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Incredible physique.
Yeah. So then in 76, you win the universe over Mike Mensah, right, in Montreal.
76, you win the universe over Mike Mensah?
Oh, that was a war.
Yeah.
But I loved it because Mike was bringing in the new heavy-duty system, and Joe Weider was really trying to maintain some form of power in that sense, and he used all the guys that were in that set, you know, the Weider system. So in that Weider system, you know, it's kind of different to sell something like the heavy duty. But Mike did a great job. I still admire Mike. I mean, Mike was one of the people that we were always, what you call it, Jack and John with each other in the gym. Always on each other's case. He was strong. Incredible physique. I mean, he worked hard in his heavy duty system. Him and Ray looked great. I mean, it's a great loss to the sport that
they
both of them are not
set.
Here.
They went through one set to failure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they looked incredible come showtime. I enjoy competing with him. He's one of, probably one of my better competitors.
Yeah. All right, so we go to 1977. Robbie won. He already won the America. He won the Mr. World. He won the Mr. Universe. He won the Mr. International. So now he's getting ready for the Olympia. So what was the hype like that year? I mean, I remember reading Muscle Builder magazine. Robbie would get better every month. Every time I got a new muscle builder in 77.
So in 77, after you won all those shows, Mr. World, all these different shows, now you're getting ready for the Mr. Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What was that like?
It was an incredible experience to go in and train and prepare for such a year for the first time out. And one of the things that kind of dumbfounded me that it was new to me to be able to get in that kind of competitive shape and be able to compete with someone that was already a legend. The odds were not in my favor, but I wanted to go in there to be in the best shape that I could be in. And then you leave it up to the judges.
Yeah.
They decided to train to be Miss Olympia three different times. I mean, I can't have no bad feelings for Frank because he did have an incredible physique.
Yeah.
At the same time, they were looking for a change. So my physique was supposed to be that next shape trained.
Yeah.
After that, you know, I just deal with everything that has happened to me in that whole school.
Yeah.
But Frank did a great job. I have nothing negative to say about it.
Yeah.
I'm just happy to win my Sandow first time, first Masters Division winner.
Right,
that,
right.
To me, is ends my career. You want to go out and win a job.
Yeah.
But that's Robbie, my whole thing. I wanted to get a Sandow, and I wanted to go out and win. I wanted to get up healthy. Coming out of the sport, I wanted to be healthy.
Yeah.
And I programmed myself for that. I'm proud that I did a great job. I'm glad that I'm healthy. I don't have any injuries, no kind of health issues.
Yeah.
So I'm in a happy place.
Yeah.
I would love to do it again.
Yeah, but. So that 77, though, I mean, did you think you were going to win? Because I thought you were one of the favorites along with Ferrigno and Frank Zane.
Did you think you were going to win when you were entering that show because you were basically at the peak of your career in 1977?
With the
Olympia.
Yeah, I was really hoping that I would be able to pull it off. But at the same time, if the system at that point wasn't ready for that again yet.
Mm-hmm.
When I came out of it, Lee Haney came in and won it 8 consecutive times. So I can go along with it. I can appreciate that. But being able to be a competitor, compete on the stage with Frank Zane, come in second to him 7 different times, 3 different times, I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Do you think you should have beat Frank Zane, Robbie? Because a lot of people thought you had a better physique than Frank Zane.
You're saying a lot of people thought you should have beat Frank because you had a lot more size.
Mm-hmm.
But do you feel, I mean, it's hard to say because, you know.
No, if I can be accurate about it, I think I was too virulent.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. I'm the kind of person, I'm from the Black Panther time period.
Uh-huh.
The Black Bruce and the Leather Jacket. I grew up in that time period. I was a member of that crew. You speak out whenever it's not right and you feel uncomfortable with it, you have something to say. But no one told me that, hey, look, you have to bend your lips. I thought it was a freedom of speech to say what you want. No hard feelings. But in that business world, it has to work in a completely different way. It took me a while to learn that.
It wasn't politically correct.
Yeah, it wasn't politically correct. So you can't get upset about it.
Right.
I'm not upset about it.
And you think that had something to do with the placing?
Oh, yeah. That happened to have something to do with that placing.
Hmm.
If you're in there and you're verbal, I think it's one reason. All you have to do is look at Sean Ray. Sean Ray was verbal, too. You understand
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
He got in there and got to tune that a little bit too much. They just kind of says, hey.
Yeah.
Hey, come on now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this, in a point, you have to be able to be somewhat politically correct and not be over-verbalizing how you feel. If you do it too much, then because Kai Green is in the same kind of situation.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy has an incredible physique. He's a great poser. But, I mean, too much of that.
Yeah.
Kind of pushed to the corner.
Yeah. So the next year in 78, that's pretty much when pro bodybuilding started because we had the Night of the Champions. They had a Gold's Classic in July, and Robbie won both of those shows.
In 78?
In 78, yeah.
In 78, you won two pro shows?
Mm-hmm.
What were they?
I think the first one was
Night of the Champions.
Night
of the Champions, and then I think it was
Gold's Classic. Gold's Classic?
Gold's Classic?
What?
Arnold's Classic? Or
no,
what
no, no. Gold. Gold's Classic. Gold's Gym.
Gold's Classic? Gold's Classic?
Gold's Gym.
I think it was best in the world.
Best in the world.
That's what I'm going. Best in the world.
We're having a hard time hearing you, John. That's why.
Oh, really? Started. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It was the Orange Cloud. It was the Night of the Champions. And right after the Night of the Champions, it's the best in the world.
Best in the world.
Yeah.
Well, I won a nice big one. What is it? Seville. Won a Seville. Yeah, they gave me a Seville. Really? Yeah. $7,500 cash prize.
Yeah.
Still got the car.
Really?
Yeah. Really?
I can't drive it, but I got a pocket.
Yeah, because that's really when pro bodybuilding started, right? I mean, they had the Mr. Olympia before, but now they had more Grand Prix
shows. That's really when pro bodybuilding started.
That's when it started to really getting out there and evolving.
More shows.
I think Wayne DeMille was the big man at that point.
Yeah.
We were going to, I think, seven different shows all over the United States.
Right.
And for some reason, it just kind of started to go in a completely different direction. I thought that was great for bodybuilding, having it in New Orleans, one time it'd be in Florida, then in New York, Louisiana. It was all over the place. I thought it was such a great time period for bodybuilding, for the bodybuilders to at least, you know, make a little bit of money.
Yeah.
It opened the doors up.
Right.
I still think Mr. Olympia should be a prize of $1 million.
Hey! Yeah. Are you serious?
Because in today's world, at least in California, $1 million ain't that much.
Right, right.
After you pay tax on it,
right.
You know, you got 600.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not that much money.
Right, no, not in California.
These guys put their lives on the line. They train their asses off.
Yeah.
And how much is the price today? I don't even know. How much is it, John?
I think it's $400,000.
Is it $400,000?
Yeah, I think it was $400,000.
$400,000?
Yeah.
That's not, I mean, when you think about how much these supplement companies are making a year,
yeah,
you would think that Mr. Olympia would be at least a million.
It's 2019. Thank you. I would say $1 million, then you kind of come down off it. You come down off of it. I mean, everybody should get a little piece of money.
Yeah. Come on.
That was my fertilizer back in the 70s,
John. That's why at some point, bodybuilding should form a union.
Seriously.
So they have somebody to speak up for them.
They don't.
And they should have benefits, and they should, you know.
Something.
Yeah.
Remember.
I'll be honest with you, John. That was one of the reasons when I came in there, like in the 70s, all was coming out, and they were bringing the next great physique they wanted to come in, which was myself at that point. And they were telling me, we want you bigger. And I thought, why? I said, I don't have a contract. Can you give me a contract?
Mm-hmm.
So I can have some insurance money here, just in case I get sick. That was out of the question. Nobody cared about that.
Yeah.
I think it definitely should be. I think the people that run the business should really start looking at the foundation. It's really the bodybuilding.
Yeah,
I mean, if the body's coming in and getting in great shape, there should be some redemption there. They should be paying a little bit more money.
Seriously. Remember in
this is 2020. Are you seeing it? Am I right?
Yeah. Back in 1978, Cal Scalak tried to organize a union. You remember that?
In 1978, Cal tried to form a union. Cal Scalak?
Yeah.
There you go. No more need to be said.
Right. He tried, but nothing happened.
No.
Because all the bodybuilders, I guess, were scared.
They were afraid. Everybody was afraid that if they get involved in that, that they wouldn't make a living, or they wouldn't be able to do anything. There would be no contract. There would be nothing.
Yeah.
So they put Cal in a hole where Cal was pretty much
pushed
banished from the bottom.
Scared, yeah.
I thought that was bad. I really did. I thought they should at least listen to the guys, let them vent, have some voice in the whole social process, but that wasn't to be.
Yeah, yeah. Robbie, what'd you think of Frank Zane as a bodybuilder?
I'm still disappointed, John, in how it is being now today. I speak about it every chance I get.
Yeah.
I think that they should really take a look at what they're doing and really build a foundation with the bodybuilding and try to bring bodybuilding back into the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
But we've lost it.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
If you never have a union, you don't have a representative to negotiate the deals.
Yeah, it's almost like really slavery. Yeah. Come on now, if I don't talk and be right, I can't make a living.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Right. Robbie, what'd you think of Frank Zane as a bodybuilder?
What's your feelings about Frank Zane as a bodybuilder?
I think Frank, I wanted to look like Frank. I thought he had
classic physique,
muscular. Yeah. Every muscle group was there, evident. Yeah. I thought that he was pretty much like a Greek statue, seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I feel that Marvin Spieth. Very symmetrical. He had it down. He knew exactly what to do, how to breathe. I mean, great pose.
You know, one time I watched Danny Padilla come out on stage to that song Short People, and he tore the house down. Let me tell you, Danny was also very symmetrical.
When I look at it, John, there's just so many little pieces I would like to take back from that time period and put right here right now.
John, what was really fun about that time period is each bodybuilder had their own flavor.
Yeah.
Their own personality.
Yeah.
You know, Danny Padilla came out to Short People.
He tore the socks off, little legs, his arms.
Yeah. I mean, he tore the house down, man.
Yeah. I loved it.
And Robbie, you had a real battle with Danny at the Night of the Champions. They beat him by 1 point, I think, right?
You had a battle with Danny at the Night of the Champions.
Hey, I think that's when I first heard Short People.
Yeah.
He came out with Short People.
I was there.
When he came out with the Short People song, man, the audience was roaring. And I said to myself, this is going to be a battle.
You won by one point.
Yeah.
Okay. He brought the house down. I never forgot that.
Yeah.
Still no more. It's like watching Ed Cornette when I heard the passing of Ed Cornette. I mean, we lost a great individual in the sport of bodybuilding.
Absolutely.
When he passed on, when I heard that he had passed away, my mind immediately flashed on Ed doing squats and pumping iron.
Yeah.
I thought, wow, Ed gone. Wow.
Yeah.
That's heavy. That was heavy for me. Because my mind immediately went back to him, seeing him in the corner, coming down with that big 18th and 19th, and he's breathing, his whole body is shaking.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there watching this in my mind, and I'm thinking, wow, you got to work harder when you're tired.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Robbie, in the 1980 and 81 Olympia, you didn't go into those contests. Were you planning on leaving the IFBB? Were you going to try some other shows, some other federations?
80 and 81, you didn't compete in those shows, did you?
My whole theory on that was I thought, like, you know, it's no sense in me wasting myself because I've been competing for so long. I mean, I'm very comfortable with doing what I do, but what I wanted to do was come down off the chemicals.
Oh, okay.
I think it'd give my body a break from that stuff because I've been there doing it now since 1975.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking my health was a little bit more important. I'm pushing the mountain for the pedal. I'm traveling all the world, exhibitions and seminars, everywhere. So I think I would take that money instead of actually going there and being a competitor.
Okay. Were you sad you didn't go into the 1980 Olympia? That was the one Arnold made a comeback, and it was real controversial. Do you wish you would have went in it just to see what would have happened?
In the 80 Olympia, the one Arnold came back and won? Don't you wish you would have entered that show?
Yeah, I thought about it when I saw it. I said, oh, man.
Yeah.
I should have been in that one.
Yeah.
That was great. But, you know, he came back. He had some semblance of himself.
Yeah.
Even though he had shoulder problems. Yeah. It's hard to beat somebody like that in a position like that that has won it 6-7 times.
Yeah.
I don't think they gave it to him. I think they gave it to him on the fact that he came back with some a great arm, the same physique, maybe a lot leaner. He wasn't peaked, but he was there. I think that was his winning edge, seriously.
Yeah.
And him being Arnold Schwarzenegger at the same time, a celebrity.
Yeah.
Yes. He did come back with some. I've reviewed the pictures, John, at least 7 or 8 times, and I see it go back. Sometimes I see him, and he still stands out.
And
I still think that contributed to what we were doing back in the 70s.
John, you posted a picture of Arnold's front double
just
bicep.
Just recently, yeah.
I looked at that picture and I just think that's how it's supposed to look.
Right.
And if you're not going to look like Arnold, and I look in a double bicep, welcome.
Exactly. Stretch in between sets. And also, listen, work on your posing.
Yeah.
Turn your wrist up.
Yes.
Everybody stand over there turning the wrist this way.
We've talked about this. You got to turn it over your wrist. And
the more you turn your wrist, the bigger the bicep.
What happened to our side chest shot? I still, to this day, I look at these guys when they they crunch down and bring the shoulder forward.
Why?
I don't understand. Why? What confuses me is why don't the judges hold a meeting,
hey,
and say to the competitors, listen, here's how we want the side chest shot done.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And then when you watch these girls' competitors in these shows, why do they turn around and stick their butt way up?
Like,
it doesn't look
right.
It doesn't look good.
Why don't the judges say, well, you know, that's not necessary?
Yeah.
I don't understand why the judges don't take charge of this
and
explain to the competitors, this is the structure, the foundation we want of the posing.
If it was my daughter that she did it, I'd go to get on the stage.
Yeah.
Well, I know. Just
I would go to the stage.
It's awkward.
I don't.
It's awkward. It doesn't look right. Pleasing. I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand.
I know.
And it's there is no logic to it. I guess it's just
they figured out the way to trigger the judges.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can be thinking of, because there's no really need to do that. You can't stand there, cross your legs, and look more ladylike and do that.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that.
No, yeah, you know.
You hear people, I've been in this competition, that you hear a lot of the people that are sitting at the fans that are talking, and that's what they're talking about, though.
Yeah.
Well, and a lot of people don't like it, so I don't understand. It's confusing to me why the judges don't have a meeting with competitors and say, listen, it's not necessary for you girls to show a back hose to stick your ass way out and bend forward.
It doesn't make sense.
Don't understand.
Yeah. Well, it seems like to me in the 1990s, as far as bodybuilding goes, it seems like we lost the symmetry and the shape. It was more mass, you know?
He's saying that the bodybuilders today compared to the bodybuilders back then have lost that symmetry.
Yeah.
It's kind of square and blocky.
Yeah. I think someone flashed a picture of the old guys and the new guys, and they said old school rules, and that's a true fact.
Yeah.
I mean, no put down to these younger generations of bodybuilding, but there's kind of that loose in the head. The kind of people really don't want to look like that. I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
I wonder if stretching in between sets,
I think it makes a big difference.
Can have something to do with
I
this
think so.
Blocky square look.
Yeah, I really think so. Nobody do chins anymore, John. You don't see
right.
It. I'm watching the pros in here. Yeah. They don't. Nobody's doing chins.
Right.
Chins is for strength, the bicep, tricep, lat, waist. Yeah. Give you more of a taper.
Yeah.
I mean, it's automatic.
Yeah.
Chins is on.
Robbie, do you still do all those basic compound movements that we used to do back in the days? The chin ups, the pullovers.
I still do all that stuff.
Wow.
John, I still do all the basic exercises.
Yeah.
Every now and a blue moon, I'll slip into a machine, but very seldom. It's always free weight, barbell, dumbbell. As I say, every now and then I'll try a machine to get a different feeling to the body, see what it feels like. But I'm just straight out iron. I love the iron.
Yeah. What do you think about these guys that say, you know, as the bodybuilders get older, they shouldn't train so heavy, they're going to hurt themselves? You know, you're still training heavy and you're, 72 years old?
You know, what do you think about when people say as you get older, you should train lighter and different than when you did when you were younger? I guess everybody's different. It's all on really what works for you, John, because we're all different.
Mm-hmm.
When you've had injuries and surgeries, you have to kind of work around the injuries.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I tore my pec, I tore my hamstring, so I have to train a little differently.
Yeah.
When I do pull downs, I use one at a time, the cables, because when I do them together, I get a headache the next day in the back of the neck. So you have to work around injuries, but I don't think there's one size fits all.
Yeah.
I think it's the same thing with training and eating.
Yeah.
There's a basic foundation,
mm-hmm.
but I think there's an individual thing that happens here. The real goal is to stay in the gym, and for me, it's like you can't have a car that runs on just water and oil.
Nope.
That's why when people diet, you know, there's all these crazy diets. I mean, you got to have protein, carbs, and good fats.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's so many different diets, and you can talk to 10 different trainers, you'll get 10 different opinions. But I still believe you have to kind of go back to the basics.
Yeah.
And try and eat as clean as you can, and you will get results.
Yeah.
But there are modifications to each individual.
I think you have to apply that. I just love iron. I mean, I've always, CFU bench presses, incline presses, dumbbells. I mean, I mean, everything is basically done with that. I do cables and things like that. As I said, very seldom do I use machine. And if the dude is just a play day for me, I'll kind of ease out and maybe do something different. I'll send it to a basic exercise.
Yeah.
But I stick with the basics.
Now, if you ever see Eddie Giuliani, now here's a guy, theoretically, if you read books and get certified, when I did the ESPN show, I had to get certified every year.
Okay.
And we shot for 10 years, and we ran for 16.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie does everything wrong, but he's never had an injury.
Yeah.
Eddie trains the entire body every day.
Yep.
Every day, seven days a week.
7 days a week.
He's never been injured. Wow.
Never been injured. So, I mean, there's a guy who throws the whole books and all the education out the window.
Completely.
And he looks great.
Yeah.
I definitely believe in the iron. I like to stick with the basic exercises. I still do the chin to the front, chin to the back. I go rotate chin to the front, chin to the back. I still do the T-roll bar deadlifts. I still do the long pulley roll. I still stick with the basics.
Yeah.
I might do low reps one time around for my physique because I am older, but I still go back and do my reps.
Yeah.
Those same basic exercises.
Yeah.
Harder, quicker. I'm more intense in the gym than I will on the beat. When I was a competitor.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the reasons I've been able to maintain the physique, too.
Yeah.
Sure, I mean, I go to the gym and train the body for biceps and triceps and chest probably 50 minutes.
Yeah.
It's short, intense, quick, heavy, leave it alone. And I think that's one reason I haven't had the injuries too, y'all. Seriously.
Right, right.
I'm even amazed.
Yeah, I know.
Something to go wrong and all that. Really.
Yeah.
I guess it's just years and years.
So you listen to your body, Robbie. That's what it is. He listens to his body.
You listen to your body. Yeah. You know
it. I know the body. I listen to it. If I need to take a day off, I take a day off.
Yeah.
I try to get in at least 4 to 5 good, hard, heavy training days.
Yeah.
I take a day off. Sometimes I'll take 2 off.
Yeah.
But I'm always doing something to keep that body healthy, the food, the aerobics, something. Yeah. I might go to the gym and just work my abs and do aerobics, but I do something.
Yeah, yeah. Let me talk about 1980 because you went over to Serge Nubre's WABA organization, the WABBA.
1980, Serge Nubre's organization. You went over there. What was it called?
The WWBA.
Yeah.
WWBA. What was that like?
I mean, it was just a cast up of the IFBB. They had myself, Sergio Olivia, him that competed. Some of the others, Anulu and all the old guys from that time period.
Yeah.
But nobody was chosen to win. Nobody said who won or anything. It was more like just a show.
Yeah.
I mean, the place was packed, but it was basically just a show.
Yeah. What was it like competing against Sergio?
I mean, I admired him, man. I mean, I thought when I grew up as a kid, incredible physique.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, well, I want to look like Sergio Olivia. I mean, you need role models. You need Sergio Olivia. You need Sergio Bray, Lombo,
Robbie,
myself. I mean, Fred. You need people like that so that the young people can really look at it and find a way to be inspired and motivated by it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the older guys, a lot of the young folks really work with the older guys. I think you see a lot better physiques.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I even trained one for him. He came all the way from back east. He came out here. He worked with me. But when working with me and then working by himself, he couldn't handle the weight jump. He had difficulty because it put them in a different position. They're handling the weights and doing the weights completely different. I'm having them doing old school style.
Couldn't handle it. Yeah, yeah.
We were doing curls, which is called bench curls, and he got like the 6-7 rep and his whole body is shaking, right?
Right.
So I'm kind of having him get the weight up, and then I kind of turned my head because I got distracted.
Put it down.
No. It was falling, would just snatch all of this off.
Oh, wow.
So I said to myself, oh boy. I said, you have to change the weight. You have to change that weight from what he was using, the way he used it, the way I used it is completely different.
Yeah, yeah.
You should have done what we used to do. You would have
You have to add the weight from that
head. Yeah.
Yeah.
But see, those were the good ones. That's what Rick and I and Michael. Michael Quinn used to be doing so.
Yeah.
Those were the days that
we would do breakdowns where you would get as many reps as you can with heavy weight,
put the weight down, and go to the next
one, cut the weight down, cut it in half, and double the reps.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Ooh, you want to talk about a burn?
Yeah, yeah.
I think bodybuilding. I really, as I say, I'm sweating, y'all, because the beauty of it, it being your body is a, you know, it's a canvas.
Yeah.
The barbells and dumbbells are your paintbrushes. That's how I see it, the cable. Yeah. I mean, you use these things to develop that sculpture that disease.
Yeah.
So, I mean, amount of weight you use can vary in that whole context of things. So, I use, as Rick was saying, we use them drop sets and straight sets.
Yeah.
Figure be so much blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, giant sets. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, those were the days, bro. That was a fun time.
Yeah. Well, Robbie, what amazed me about your career is, you know, you started in the
70s. I missed you too, John. You better believe
me. I bet. You started in the 70s. You were competing with Arnold and Franco, and then you came back. Then you were competing at your best in the 80s, too, in the late 1980s against Lee Haney and Gaspari and DeMeo.
You did come back in the late 80s and compete against Lee Haney.
Yeah, that was a great time period. I think my career took off again. I probably had about two or three of them.
Yeah.
that was a good time period. I remember coming back and competing with Lee Haney and all those guys. And then it came down to a big event for myself and, what was it, Rick Gaspari in the arm class.
That's right.
Yeah.
That for me was awesome.
Yeah.
When they brought myself and Rick out on stage. And to have 7,000 people win or lose, Robbie, on their feet, John, screaming and hollering, Robbie. I said to myself, I loved it. Such a great time period.
Yeah.
Rich won it, I came to second, but with here comes in my flashback mindset to hear all those 7,000 people on their feet. Calling my name.
The energy. Wow. It's something you can't buy.
No, right. You can't buy it. Right.
It's energy, and it's just you know, a positive thing.
Yeah. If I could have shook each person's hand up and said, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Plus,
you're in your 40s, and you're competing against guys in their 20s. In the best in the world.
Your 40s, and they were in their 20s.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So I think that the physique had matured, and I came back, and I was in great shape.
Yeah.
And throughout, then that was the Grand Prix. After the Grand Prix, they go to 7 shows. And I played second to Rich Gaspari throughout the whole Grand Tour. To me, that was a great comeback. I loved it.
Yeah. You think you should have beat Gaspari in that show?
You think you could have beat him? You should have beat him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course I should have, but in that time period.
He
was on the covers. He was the man. That's how I look at things. I don't look at things like that as a setback or have bad feelings about it, John. I thought it was a great competition. We both brought the house down. We both were in incredible shape.
Yeah.
The fans loved it. The fans loved the fact that I was in such a great shape at that point in my 40s.
Yeah.
So I think that, to me, was the biggest appreciation out of the whole thing.
You know, John,
the second didn't matter.
It's always better. Robbie's right. Because when I did the L.A., I won the L.A., and then when I got to the Cal, this guy, Mel Hart, beat me. He took first. I took second.
Yeah.
And then I see him on the boardwalk, and it's unfortunate what happened to him.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't look at it as an anger thing.
No.
You know,
shouldn't be.
Second was still good.
Yeah.
Hey, let me tell you, second, I know people listen. I still believe everybody wants to win, and you should always want to win. You can't control what happens.
Nope.
So right. If you do take second, you still got to feel good about it.
Yeah.
Because if you carry around anger for a lot of people, all you're doing is punishing yourself. Nobody else gives a shit.
Nobody
cares.
And you have pictures to show how good you did.
Did you look?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
I've never, even my place with Frank that two or three times there, I've never had any bad feelings for Frank or anybody that was judging the event. I think that was the way it's supposed to be. Maybe I was missing something in my own physique. I just sit there and judge and say, oh, well, they didn't do it to me because I'm a blood.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a competition. You want to be in your best shape, and that's what you have to try to achieve. If you miss it, then there's another time.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Masters Olympia where he beat Lou Ferrigno. You think that was designed just to give Lou Ferrigno a Mr. Olympia trophy?
The Masters Olympia. Did you compete against Lou Ferrigno?
Oh, yeah. That was great. I was in Norway. I was living in Europe because I had moved over there because there was more work available for me and for my physique. I had the name, Reader magazine, and the cover, so I was able to really make a living in Europe at that point.
Yeah.
And I bought a little house over in Amsterdam, and I lived there for like almost 12 years.
Hmm.
I was in, I think, Norway at this point, and a friend of mine, Houston, the guy that I was training before, comes in, who was Mr. Norway, he said, Rodney, Wayne DeMille wants you to call him. So I said, why does he want me? Why do you want to call me? And I called Wayne, and Wayne said, hey, this is, we have a master, Mr. Olympia, we want you to come and compete. I started training that day.
Wow.
to be in the shape that I was in. Right. I started training that day. By the time I got here, I was ready.
Yes, took second, Luke.
Luke took second. I came in first. I think overall cash prize was $25,000. I think in that process, Luke lost a lot of money in that process. Because I think it really, everybody knew, we thought Luke was going to win the job. We thought Luke was going to win it. I was coming second. Boyas third. And whoever else fourth and fifth. That's how we saw it.
Right.
We knew that Lou was supposed to have won.
Right.
But then when they called my name, everybody was in all the hospital.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The judge says, the first Master Miss Olympia, 1994, the whole audience went, woo! And then it said, Robbie Robinson. I said, ooh. I loved it. No animosity toward Lou or anybody.
Yeah.
I hope that in his world, it is none toward him and him toward me. But that was just, it's supposed to happen. Everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, yeah. So what did it feel like finally winning that Olympia, that Sandow trophy?
So what did it feel like finally winning the Olympia?
Ooh!
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted, you know, you always want to go out, you want to come in at you all the time. Yes!
Yeah.
But then you want to go out of the winner. You want to win. That's why you get in such incredible great shape. I mean, you're competitive too, John. You know. You want to go in there and be your all-time best. Awesome.
Yeah.
Or don't get up there. If you're going to be awesome, to me, it's a waste of time.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Absolutely. So when was your last show, Robbie? How long did you compete?
How long did you compete? When was your last show?
2001. I won the Masters. I came back to start competing over 50. And I think I won that over 50, I think about 4 or 5 times. Then I just kind of eased myself out of it. 2001 and went back to the place that I was renting out in Amsterdam and stayed there for a while.
Okay.
I came back to the States probably just a couple of years ago.
Really? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
What's your diet like, Robbie? What are you eating?
I like Europe. I think it's a nice place, nice people.
He wants to know what your diet's like. What's your diet like?
Now?
Yeah.
It's still bodybuilding, girl. I still eat pretty much 4, 5, 6 meals a day. I definitely eat the healthy snacks. I still drink all the water. I still treat my body as if I'm really getting ready for a competition daily.
That's why he's always ripped.
Yeah, that's what it is.
He's always ripped.
Yeah, I'm always in muscular shape. So I figured it's, I mean, no, I wanted to come out of the gym with no saggy skin or nothing like that.
Yeah.
Nice and tight. So I know that my weight and whatever I need to use to keep that skin and everything evolving and being in nice, great shape. I mean, at 72, going on 73 this coming May, I'm proud of what I've accomplished.
You should be serious.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely amazing.
I mean, I know that hard work pays off and that you can reinvent yourself, that muscles do not turn to fat, that you can always gain weight and gain muscle even as you age, and that you have to just keep a healthy regime, positive frame of mind, don't waste your time on anger. Be as calm as you possibly can, and great things just manifest.
That's why we read books. And see, this is what I try and tell a lot of the young kids. If you don't exercise your mind, you're not going to fire on the mind-body-spirit connections.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys in here who look great, girls too, but they walk around like their dog died. They're angry.
Yeah.
So I keep telling them, I give away so many books. And I say, listen, because I talk to a lot of these people, and they say, oh, I'm depressed, I'm not happy. I go, well, listen, just read this book and let me know what you think. I give away hundreds of books, and probably 98% of them never open the book up.
Never read it,
which is challenging for me to understand, because if you keep telling me you're depressed and not happy, and I give you a book that will give you tools to look at things from a different point of view that will make you happier, why won't you open the book?
Right.
I don't understand.
Exactly. Right.
I think calm, being very calm about things, and something go wrong, being angry and not getting all upset is not going to change your voice. So it's better to just kind of calm yourself, look at it. How can I make changes here to get to the next level?
Yeah.
That's how I see things.
How do you respond to whatever comes into your life is everything?
Yeah.
No matter what it is, how do you respond to it is everything?
Everything. If you respond to it in a bad way, you can go and get repercussions. If you respond in a good way, you're going to get good things to come out of it. Yeah. Everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
And none of us are here forever.
No.
So, that's true.
Just waking up is a beautiful thing to
every morning.
Right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If you wake up with that gratitude,
yeah.
It's just a happier day.
Right.
I can't wait, John. Every morning, 4 a.m.
Yeah.
In the gym with Michael O'Hearn, bumming and blessing. Anyhow, everybody. I want to have you kid, leave, go home, eat, come back.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing.
I love it, John.
Robbie, what were some of your most memorable experiences or contests in your career? Because you had a long career.
What was your most memorable experiences at Golds or contests that you could think of? Were they all just amazing?
They were all amazing because, you know, I grew up in the South, in the swamps as a kid. And you're dreaming. I'm dreaming to be famous and, you know, build an incredible physique and going through all the different things in your life, set the soul to get to that point, and then boom, I'm in California, 1975. Wow! All the frost day! Ow! Come on! It's your mind just goes...
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how a lot of our stories are really similar?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We really, you know, everybody's comes from a little background where it was challenging.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you wind up at Golds, and here you are looking at people that were on your vision board and you're training with them.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
Totally. Yeah. I left Florida, came out here, everybody's saying, in my state and where I grew up, he ain't gonna make it. He gonna come back home with his tail between his legs. I said, "Oh yes, I will." No. I'm going there. I'm gonna make it.
Right.
I'm gonna make some semblance of accomplish something while I'm there. And when I was in school at one point, and I remember hiding this muscle magazine inside of my biology book. So I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at all of them, and the teacher come out and grab me right here. And he pinched that thing. He snatched the magazine and said, "You'll never look like this." I mean, I'm thinking like, wow, okay, dokie. 1975, I'm coming into Tallahassee. He's getting off the plane. I'm getting off the plane.
Oh, shit.
I walked into him and gave him a magazine inside of another envelope. And on the cover was Robbie Rock.
Oh, yeah.
On the beach.
That's right.
Yep. And after that, I remember getting this letter in the mail. He says, "Awesome." That's all he said.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Because he was the one person who told me I would never look like that.
Right.
Never
right.
Say never.
No.
Never.
You know,
never.
When you come here, and I know a lot of people think it's different because now we have social media and everybody's a guru and a star all over the world. But back then, when you came to Gold's Gym, I remember the first time I came in, Tom Platz was squatting.
Yeah.
And it takes the energy and the passion level through the roof.
Yeah.
Tom was doing, I don't know, 35 reps or 315.
Yeah.
And then he would drop the weight and lay on his back and hyperventilate and almost puke.
Yeah.
It was like, wow.
Yeah.
So the training you were doing when you were a kid, you thought was so hard. Now we went to another
level.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
It was amazing. To be able to be in the atmosphere and feel all of that and feel your body actually growing from it and your mind maturing from it, it was an incredible time.
No matter who you were back then, when you walked in and it was one room and it was all bodybuilders, and I mean, they were all strong.
Yeah.
All strong.
Everybody was strong.
So you no longer were the big fish in the little pond.
Right.
Now you're a little fish in a bigger pond, so the energy and the desire.
Yeah,
it's
going to a whole other level.
Yeah, it's hard to explain.
Yeah.
But it was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. All right, guys. Well, I want to thank you for joining me. I appreciate
Robbie.
Thank
you.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it for having me on.
All right. I appreciate Robbie coming on. And thank you, Rick, for setting this up and joining us.
My pleasure, man.
Definitely, guy.
Thank you, guy.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
All right.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you for listening to this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank Rick Valente for getting the legend Robbie Robinson on the air, and thanks both of those guys for appearing, and we wish Robbie the best. I hope he gets better soon. I also want to thank our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And now, without further ado, I'm going to read this article from the November 1976 issue of Muscle Builder magazine. It was written by Rick Wayne, who was, of course, one of the greatest writers in the bodybuilding history. And it's called How to Look Your Muscular Best at Contest Time by Arnold Schwarzenegger, as told to Rick Wayne. So this was at the end of 1976, about a year after Arnold stopped competing. He retired, of course, in 1975 after he won his sixth Mr. Olympia in South Africa, the contest that was filmed for Pumping Iron. So this is sort of an advice article by Arnold on how other bodybuilders can achieve their greatest shape. So it starts out, "You'd think after all this time I would have accepted the truth, that this man is the greatest bodybuilder on this or any other time. Hell, who on earth can boast a record that includes five Mr. Universe wins and a stranglehold on the Mr. Olympia title that has not slackened even in 6 years of take-on-all competition? It would take George Butler's movie Pumping Iron to finally convince me. I admit it now. Let the world hear me. Arnold Schwarzenegger is the greatest bodybuilder of this or any other time, just as he said he would be when he was only 19 and fat. Schwarzenegger is so far ahead of any other bodybuilder you might care to mention, it would take those geniuses at NASA to tell exactly how many light years. The fascinating thing about Schwarzenegger is, as far as I am concerned, his mental-physical tie-in. Okay, so he's got the muscle. He can afford to be confident. Arrogant, even. But then, didn't Sergio Oliva have a mess of muscle to his name? Didn't Bill Pearl, Harold Poole, Chuck Sipes, and most of the popular giants of the past 10 years or so? And yet they did not come close to Arnold Schwarzenegger when it comes to self-confidence. Heck, the Schwarzenegger self-confidence is, yes, overpowering. It is this aggressive ego of his that mutilates his opposition even before the judges have started calling for lat spreads from the front and side chest postures. It is this same devastating self-confidence that takes over even when muscle alone cannot do it. Hear Arnold talk on contest preparation. First of all, you have to know you are the king. You have to know it with every drop of your blood, every sinew in your body, every inch of your soul. You can't pretend you are, for the judges will check you out and you will let yourself down in the end. Robbie Robinson is great. Well, he's good. But when you watch him posing for the judges or on stage, you can feel he knows he's not the king. His poses are shaky. They lack something. A factor. An important factor is missing. He has no real self-confidence, or he would open himself up to the audience. His muscles would scream, "Hey, look at me. There is none better on earth." Sergio Oliva, before I came on the scene, had that air about him. He did everything wrong on stage, but the man did it with self-confidence. He let you know anything he did had to be right, because it was being done by Sergio Oliva, the king. But I put an end to all that. He looked at me, and all he saw was perfection. All I showed was perfection, even though I may have had one or two shortcomings. I did not advertise my shortcomings, only my very best points. That is why I never do a pose, because it looks good when another star does it. My poses have to be me. Still on Sergio, the man Arnold says is the greatest after me. I remember we competed in Germany in 1972. I looked at the man and I could not believe my eyes. He was in the greatest shape of his life, hard as a rock and so huge. His waist was so tight you could put both your hands around it. I was not at my best shape, and I felt I would have given the Mr. Olympia title to him had I been a judge. But I was not a judge. I was a contestant in the same event. My whole purpose was to win. So I started checking Sergio out, looking for any possible way I might outsmart him at the show. You see, even Sergio has his weak points, and I knew them. He's too involved with his own body at shows, paying little attention to his competition. Me? I'm not very involved with myself on the day of the contest. I prefer to check out the guy closest to me, the guy with a possible chance of beating me. I try to talk to him, make him feel he's got the battle of his life ahead of him, make him feel like the underdog, and usually it works. He goes out there knowing in his heart it is Arnold who is king, not him. But all this comes after a guy has whipped himself into king shape. How do you get there? Well, to begin with, says the man who obviously knows, You have to start preparing for your contest as early as possible. Immediately the Mr. Olympia event is over, and I have won, I start thinking of the next time. In my mind, I start looking at myself in the gym again, bombing those areas that I felt were not quite as good as they ought to have been. I'm planning the war with myself, which is what contest training is all about. Beating yourself with discipline and rigorous workouts until your mind is fully in control and you can go to the gym without much mental torture. Face up to those tons of iron that you'll push around until the next contest. Usually I give myself 2 or 3 weeks off. The muscles that have worked so hard all year deserve a break. So I say to them, enjoy yourself. I don't pay too much attention to what I eat. Everybody's on holiday for 3 weeks. But after that, it's back to work. I check my body weight and start preparing the program that will eventually leave me weighing, say, 220 pounds, but with my usual measurements. I tell myself I must not allow my body to accumulate too much fat, even though the training itself at this early stage will be fairly relaxed. For the first 3 months, I train each body part twice a week with only 10 sets. It's kind of a recuperation period, you see. All that time, I get adjustments from my chiropractor, I take acupuncture, and so on. I don't use heavy weights at this time. The next 3 months, I start to increase the training poundages, get a little more serious, start really bombing the weaker areas. I start abdominal work, the calves, and so on. Then 3 months before the contest time, I pull out the cork. Now it's business as usual. I start training twice a day, 6 days a week. I do at least 1,000 repetitions for abdominals per workout and 15 sets for the calves daily. I handle the heaviest poundages possible and I eat 4 or 5 meals a day. I should point out that until the last 3 months of contest preparation, I do not perform force reps. I don't want to burn myself out physically or mentally. That is a very important point. I wait until the last 3 months to go into this rigid form. The earlier part of my preparation is almost basic. It's the usual 8 to 10 reps per set. But during the last 3 months, I'll be doing 12 to 15 reps with drastically increased poundages. I also train much faster, forcing out sets and reps like a machine gone mad. Each muscle group gets a whipping 3 times a week and about 20 sets each workout. What about the all-important diet? Since I trained so hard in the last 3 months, I eat more carbohydrates than normally. Hell, that's when I need the carbs most, for energy. It's funny to think most guys cut out carbs from their diet when they need it most. At the end of their preparation period. About 6 weeks before the big day, however, I take less carbohydrates and I come down 3 or 4 pounds in body weight. 3 weeks before the contest, I do without ice cream, cake, bread, and so on. And so to recap, your mental state is of extreme importance in the business of winning contests. You must prepare yourself for the rigorous workouts involved. You must stick to your schedule no matter how tough it is. Check your weak points and give them hell. You have to see yourself as the winner. I mentally hear the crowds cheering my every pose. That's what keeps me bombing. I love to hear the sound of the applause. So I go out there and I earn it. Do not burn yourself out too early. Pace yourself. Watch your diet and be sure not to drop carbohydrates from your menu. They are important too. And finally, there's the matter of posing. Very, very important, says Arnold. You have to practice and practice and practice. You have to keep on until you can hit any number of poses without panting. Try to flow into your pose and always keep on moving. Don't be stiff. Don't flex too hard. Either you've done your homework, in which case the muscle will be there when you need it, or you haven't. Naturally, no homework, no muscle. No amount of tensing will bring out what isn't there in the first place. I make a point of studying how my opposition poses. I know everything Ferrigno does in his routine, the mistakes he makes, the poses he strikes without confidence, how he tries to hide flaws, and so on. Same with Franco, Nubre, and the others. And when we get there before the judges, they can see by what I do that the guys are playing games. It's a good idea to pay attention to your breathing as you practice your poses in the mirror. A guy who is panting like a spent horse will not impress the judges. He'll look like a loser all the way. You should be able to pose for 30 minutes and smile through the whole thing. Posing, all the tensing and muscle control will help bring out your cuts. It'll help etch out those muscles that stand out under the lights when they're well-defined and under good control. Stay with it. The longer you practice, the better you'll become. Since that memorable day when Arnold and Sergio clashed in New York for the first time, muscle fans have demanded the pose down at the big events. Says the man who never fails to bring the house down, at that point, you must know your strategy. If you know your opponent's going to show off a massive front lat spread, when yours is not all that great, You should be prepared to hit five fantastic shots while he's busy enjoying his big pose. I did that with Franco in South Africa recently. Everyone knows the lat spread from the back is Franco's big thing. I don't include it in my routine, only at the request of the judges. So there's Franco enjoying the applause his spread has demanded, and he's forgotten all about me. Only I flash into six of the very best I can hit, and I completely overshadow him. That's using your head. Obviously, the business of physique contests just ain't what it used to be. Not only are the champs greater than ever physically, hell, a lot of them are beginning to think like Arnold. Come to think of it, if you're thinking of entering the big IFBB events, you better start boning up on all Arnold has said in this feature. Either that, or you better get ready to get dumped. All right, great article by Rick Wayne about Arnold's attitude and his mental attitude. Awesome. We'll have more next week. All right, next week on the podcast, we are going to have our guest, Mark Martinez. Mark is in the process of putting together a movie about the golden era of bodybuilding. He's done tons of interviews with some of the great legends of the sport, including Ken Sprague, who used to own Gold's Gym, Ken Waller, Manny Perry, Bill Grant. So we're going to talk to Mark and see how his project is coming along and when it'll be out, and we'll get some more inside info on what he learned from talking to all these legends in the sport. All right, that's it for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast this week. Thanks again to my sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. We will see you guys next week. Take care, everybody. See you later.